Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and you're listening to Financial Survival. My co-host today is Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events. Today is Monday, June 8th, 2020. Good afternoon, Dave.
Happy Monday, Melody.
Happy Monday to you. And the world continues to just get nuttier and nuttier. How's that for a description of what we experience?
As long as it continues to turn.
Well, that's even in question today. So you just never know. There's talk that could possibly stop. But anyway, let's get to the market. Gold today, we had a little bit of a turnaround today, back up at $1,700, up $15.70. Silver was up 37 cents today at $1,787. Platinum was up $15 at $835. Palladium was up 70 at $2,092. USDX today was down 0.32 at 96.65. And crude oil today was down 135 at 38.20. And the paper markets today, didn't follow them today, but hey, you didn't have to. You don't have to follow the paper markets anymore. You know that the Fed is pumping as much money into it as they can. So, hey, we knew it was going to be up today, up 461 points at 27,572. Who cares if the world has fallen apart and if things are as nutty as they are, as long as these paper markets continue to rise. The NASDAQ was up 110 at 9924. The S&P was up 38 points, 3,232. 10-year yield, 0.88%. European markets were lower. Asian markets were higher. And all is good in the world. You know, while we were waiting to come on air, I told Dave, I said, have you heard the, or asked Dave if he'd heard about, you know, the reports, and I had it on my desk, and I guess it flew away by itself, but, you know, the jobs report on Friday, it was all misleading. Miscalculations was written at the end of the report. Right, Dave?
It's true. It's what we're hearing. We haven't seen the report itself and the markings, but a number of people and outlets are reporting today about the errors that are replete in the already dubious Labor Department jobless report that came out, showing an increase in jobs rather than an expected decrease. A decrease in the unemployment rate to, I believe, 13.3% instead of an expected almost 20%, which is just ridiculously low anyway. They're pointing to two reasons. One is a change in methodology that I'm not sure. I didn't see the details of those changes, and I don't know if they're tied to the other reason, which was the unusually unreliable survey of businesses that comprise these monthly numbers, that apparently there were a number of businesses that usually are surveyed that were not, that apparently there were far less Department of Labor, Bureau of Labor Statistics field personnel available to make the survey calls. So it's quite, I think, an issue here that really, I mean, calls into even more question the reliability, heck, the validity of these jobless numbers.
Well, it isn't the first time, Dave.
No.
It probably won't be the last time.
Afraid so.
But it is. And I can remember when was it the first month, maybe the second month after the shutdown? I mean, it was basically stated, hey, hold back some of those bad numbers. And we got a 1,000-point rise on the Dow from rigged numbers. How dare they not tell us talk about the real things, the truth? How dare them not give us the truth? Like, we should be shocked. Has anyone talked about a recession? We talk about us in a recession. Everybody knows we're in a recession. I think now it's official.
Yeah,
Have you heard
indeed.
anybody say anything about it?
Not too many.
Well, according to the National Bureau of Economic Research, we're in the worst U.S. downturn since the Great Depression is now officially a recession. The NBER, the National Bureau of Economic Research, made the declaration today that we're in a recession. The Business Cycle Dating Committee said that the committee recognizes that the pandemic and the public health response have resulted in a downturn with different characteristics and dynamics than prior recessions. Nonetheless, they concluded that the unprecedented magnitude of the decline in employment and production and its broad reach across the entire economy warrants the designation of this episode as a recession, even if it turns out to be briefer than earlier contractions. So I don't know if there's anything more important in there too. The committee noted that a significant decline in economic activity spread across the economy, normally visible in production, employment, and other indicators. What else is there to say about that, Dave?
Well, I mean, it's officially brought to an end the supposed longest expansion in U.S. history, lasting 128 months, according to the NBER. How long it's going to persist remains to be seen. I mean, most economists think the contraction will end at the end of the second quarter. I am a skeptic of that. You're a skeptic of that. There are a number of others who don't believe that, even as they point out in the same breath that this is the steepest, certainly, recession since the Great Depression. Or at least since World War II. We will see. I mean, one analyst pointed out that no recession has lasted less than 6 months. That's dating back to the mid-1800s. So if they say it started in February, 6 months takes us into the third quarter. Of course, past is not prologue, as we know, but boy, I would remain very skeptical, ladies and gentlemen, particularly given the unreliability of these new jobless claims.
Well, the thing of it is, no one knows. We don't know how this is going to turn out. We know how businesses have been hurt. We know they can't come back 100%, and the stock market is acting like we're all back to normal. Well, we're not. It's not normal. We're not back 100%. So, I mean, this is it's it, and again, it's so distorted. No one even knows how much debt's being created in order to keep the paper markets stronger. And that's what it's all, it's not by, pardon?
Go ahead. It's not by. Go ahead.
Mean, it's not by a great economy. So we might have had a decent economy going into the shutdown, but even we were talking about all the cracks that was appearing prior to that.
Yeah.
So those cracks didn't disappear. In fact, the shutdown made those cracks visibly wider, and you can't close them with just bringing everybody back to work. It just doesn't happen that way. Things just aren't wiped off the slate It's like, oh, well, you know, we're going to tell everybody we're all back to work. We're going back to work, and we'll just wipe those last 6 months off the slate, and we'll start from scratch. It doesn't work that way.
They'll cheat. They'll lie. So doesn't make it so.
Yeah, they'll cheat and they'll lie. It's all what you believe. It's the confidence. And if you buy their BS, then I guess everything is okay. I mean, if the U.S. GDP fell 5% in the first quarter and is likely to post the worst decline in history for the second quarter, maybe more than 50%.
Right. That's you're absolutely right. You hit it right in the head there. I mean, even the normally, I'll say, credible mainstream economist Mark Zandi of Moody's Analytics, not always right. We disagree with him. Fundamentally at times, but he in saying the recession is over a week or so ago, he followed that up by saying unemployment will be 10%, as if that's good news. 10% unemployment, ladies and gentlemen, is even in the Fed's mind is more than twice what they're looking for. 10% would be a colossal failure if you're keeping score.
And all these guys that reverse their views, because I think Mark Zandi at one time said, hey, it's going to be long, you know, and didn't he? He's one that reversed his view.
Yeah, I think you're right. I can't pinpoint that exactly what he said earlier, though.
But my point is, they get the news. Well, you know what? If you don't start talking a little more positive about what's going to happen and so forth, and this is what's really going to happen then. And it's all about confidence. That's why they change their minds. So, yes, we got some real interesting times coming. I guess there was an OPEC meeting. The OPEC kingpin, the Saudi Arabia, and non-OPEC leader Russia said today that the success of energy's alliance's latest production cuts relies on all members complying with the terms of the deal. Now, this statement comes shortly after OPEC and non-OPEC allies agreed to extend its deepest round of production cuts in history to take roughly 10% of oil supplies off the market through to the end of the year. We have no room whatsoever for lack of conformity. Well, I think I read, Dave, Libya? Said, Libya or Lebanon said, we're gonna continue to pump oil. Heck with your cuts. We'll see how the rest of them goes because they're all hurting. I mean, that's where they get their money. So Russian Energy Minister Alexander Novak said that he fully agreed with the Saudis' counterpart. He says, I can say that overall conformity levels are extremely high considering the magnitude of the cuts and how bad the situation is. You know, take heed how bad the situation is. So just another little clue there, ladies and gentlemen. But, I mean, we have seen prices rise, Dave. Oil prices.
That we have. They've surged, in fact, since the world's most powerful, or at least some of them, the oil producers, brought in a production cut of just shy of 10 million barrels a day starting May 1st. That move was designed to prop up prices at a time when the pandemic had led to an unprecedented demand shock in energy markets. You'll recall that we were talking about the prices in the negative back in, when was that? April? Maybe even May. But the International Energy Agency estimated that roughly a quarter of demand was drained from the market in April as confinement measures brought mobility to a near standstill for billions of people around the globe. So, anyway.
Well, you know, when I mentioned earlier about people changing their minds, you know, one minute they are coming out saying that, you know, we have some pretty deep problems and we have debt It's too great to be paid, too much money being printed, and then all of a sudden they have an awakening, like they didn't know that the Federal Reserve has the tools to keep the system going. Like, here's this Stanley Druckenmiller. He's a longtime hedge fund manager. Just a couple of weeks, he says he was concerned because of easy money. Too much debt was being built up in the corporate sector. What's changed? Oh, the Fed. He says he underestimated the power of the Federal Reserve. And what do I tell everybody? Never, ever underestimate the power of the Federal Reserve and the Treasury and the powers to be. Never underestimate what they can do. They can pull things out of the hat that you never even thought of. But that doesn't mean everything is okay. It makes the situation even worse. It just buys them time. And so this is an enlightening. A drunken Miller just suddenly said the Federal Reserve humbled him. Should have irritated him to see what they're doing, and that it's only going to make things worse. He says when COVID hit, he was pretty much of the view that there was a good chance that the credit bubble had finally burst, and the unwinding of that leverage would take years. That hasn't changed. He says that concern prevented the investor from capitalizing the market's robust rent. Yeah, well, you know what? It's going to reverse itself. When? I don't know. So, I mean, Dave, you know, he said worries over the corporate debt bubble was what led him to tell the Economic Club of New York in mid-May that the stock market was overvalued. If the stock market was overvalued in mid-May, when the heck do you think it is now?
Well, he also said the risk reward for equity is maybe as bad as I've seen it in my career. Now, in terms of his mind changing, perhaps the most significant reason is that he's returned just 3% to his clients during the market's 40% rally since the S&P's March bottom. That could be the aha moment. My guess is he heard from more than one client who said, we need you to step up and prop up the market like all the other CEOs are, or like most of them are. Then Druckenmiller added that, you know, this is back in May again, the wild card is that the Fed can always step up their asset purchases. And you know what, Melody? Voila. Yeah. Say it, and it shall be yours.
Yep. And say it, we're heading into a break, and that shall also be ours. We'll be right back. Please stay tuned.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSE Talk Radio. CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com, dgscoins.com. We're still waiting on the new website, Dave. It's coming, ladies and gentlemen. So just stay tuned. Radio page will be updated, a little bit easier, friendlier, being able to use it. And so I'm really excited about it. So 1-800-375-4188. And I'm just going to go over a couple of these before. I know you wanted to bring something about the Fed, but you know, you want some good news, ladies and gentlemen? Hey, Dunkin', they're hiring. I don't know how many they laid off, but for the COVID. So I don't know of these 25,000 employees that they're looking to hire. Is it an addition to what they already have, or is this just bringing people back?
Yeah, then I don't believe we know.
Yeah, so I don't know. I mean, they couldn't have anybody going inside. The only thing you could have, you know, would be the drive-thrus. So I'm sure they laid people off. Since they couldn't service folks going inside the restaurant the same way with Taco Bell, they're looking to hire. And that's the thing that's going to be really distorted when it comes out with these jobs. All you're going to hear is about everyone hiring. I mean, but you're not going to hear how many they had laid off versus how many they're hiring. So we really can't get a clear picture of exactly how good this report is. But, I mean, they had how much did their sales fall, Dave, during the shutdown?
Well, we know they've been improving, but they'd fallen 23% in the quarter so far. That's as of May 23rd. We saw that same store sales. At open restaurants, they fell 15%. Interestingly, more than 90% of its locations are open with modified operations. But another thing to remember, too, as people get called back, in addition to what Melody said in terms of comparing with how many people had been laid off previously, is that, remember, the vast majority of these employees are minimum wage or just above minimum wage employees. Mm-hmm. Whether they're, you know, 7 1/4, 8, 9, 10 bucks an hour. Again, it's part of this the servicing and retail industry that, boy, if we're counting on those industries to bring the economy back, then, boy, it's we're in for the long haul, I'm afraid. Mm-hmm. That's not to downplay or to minimize those employees' struggling finances. It's just to say in an aggregate sense what it means for the overall economy.
Well, of course not, but I mean, the facts are the facts, and that's something that we rarely get. You know, everything is always so distorted, and yeah, it's, again, that's what we've talked about heading in prior to the Great Recession, or, you know, whatever you want to call, not the Great Recession, but the shutdown, I guess. Is that
the Great
things weren't
Shutdown.
As, the Great Shutdown. The things just weren't as rosy. You know, the jobs that were created, people were working multiple jobs. They were working, you know, two part-time jobs. They weren't strong full-time jobs with benefits and everything else. So overall, we still had a weak, I don't know, a weak, not a weak economy, but a weak employment where people were, can't get by. So they're working multiple jobs. Prices are rising. Their little dollar doesn't extend as far as it once did. Things are getting more and more expensive. They fool you. Well, cereal boxes, same size box, but watch the number of ounces go down. And it amazes me sometimes. You get a box, you get this big box of cereal, and the product is only a quarter up from the bottom. I mean, and that's how they fool you. You get less, but you pay more. And that's what it's all about here in America. There were some economic figures. Chinese trade data over the weekend provided the latest reminder that, of course, we're living in a time in which economic figures aren't going to tell us what we want to know or need to know. Exports were down less than expected in May. Of course, that was thanks to a surge in medical exports. Imports were slightly lower than expected thanks to weak commodity prices, and confirming that China isn't returning as a demand center for the global economy as quickly as one would hope. How can they return as a demand center for the global economy when every global economy is shut down? It's just, who are these people? You know, we are in an election year. And, you know, we've had, I don't know why I'm not even going to go into what Donald Trump had tweeted earlier. But it takes time to restart economies. And it's going to take longer than what anyone will tell you, Dave.
Indeed. It's hard to imagine this sort of prolonged jump in container traffic and Shanghai, Rotterdam, L.A., or Long Beach this summer that might signal a healthy world. And whatever data we do get, certainly be distorted and messy. I mean, we can point just to last Friday's jobs report as a primary example. But also remember that crude oil being stored out at sea? Well, it's a fair bet that plenty of containers baking on the docks represent their own logjam. There are just fewer ships moving around the world to carry them right now. Mario Cordero, who's the executive director of the Port of Long Beach, that's in California, said, "I think we're definitely a year away from some sense of normalcy."
Nice helicopter background, Dave.
Am I under attack? Gosh.
We got to quit airing these programs.
Oh,
gosh. They're coming for
us. They're gunning for us. Well, Cordero wants a return to normal for business reasons, but there's another reason to long for normalcy as well. It's only then that we'll be able to really assess the damage done to economies all over the world and see if there have been any significant structural shifts to the U.S.-China trade, supply chains, and things like that. So until then, ladies and gentlemen, we are just puppets of the powers that be in what they report to us.
Well, I think we can get through this, your weekly newsletter article, Dave. You talk about gold.
It's true. One step up, one step back.
And one step up again.
And one step up again as the new week starts. But that's what the past month has looked like for gold, and that's good news.
It is good news.
I mean, from 1690 an ounce on May 5th to about the same, slightly less, 1 month later, that was on Friday. I mean, that's what I call staying power, especially in the face of an S&P moving up nearly 300 points or 10% over the same period. Go gold. As a bit warning today, gold was off to a strong start, rising over 12 at $12. It rose about, what was it, three more dollars to breach the 1700 level again in the New York spot market. U.S. gold futures are up again too after a correcting week. A fragile U.S. dollar on the foreign exchange market and higher crude oil prices were just two of the bullish forces driving precious metal bulls to start a new trading week. Gold's latest rebound, while not surprising to us, comes on the heel of a frustrating correction last week, during which prices fell about 3%, not the least of which because of continuing major turmoil all across the nation and world.
And what people seem to forget, you know, gold is still up about 11% this year, 19% last year. Those are some pretty strong numbers, and we haven't seen, and this is just the beginning, Dave.
It sure is. I mean, in last week's sell-off, especially coupled with today's turnaround, signals another key buying opportunity for investors. One precious metal analyst believes the next upside price objective for gold bulls is for August futures to close above solid resistance at 1750. After today, we're on the road to that. A number of other analysts believe that after gold sustains a run above 1700, it'll head straight for 18, 19, 2000 in fairly short order. And then who knows after that? Why? A handful of reasons. One is a loss of confidence in the U.S. dollar, particularly now in response to the Fed's massive money printing to bail out investors.
You know, you point out that there was a someone who said that if the central banks end up using gold to restore investor confidence, which they will, gold would have to be $10,000 an ounce or higher.
And there is speaking truth to power. That same expert said any lower price would force central banks to reduce their money supplies to maintain parity, which would be highly deflationary. And right now, as economist John Williams of ShadowStats.com recently told Greg Hunter, U.S. M2 money supply is at an all-time high, $18.1 trillion, Melody, as of May 25th. It was about $15.3 trillion at the start of this year. Now, another reason gold's heading up, the bull market continues. Using the last two bull markets as a baseline, the average gains during those periods shows gold soaring to a minimum of 14,000 an ounce in 5 years. So we start off at one person saying 10, another expert with good creds saying 14. Now another factor is panic buying in response to a new unforeseen event. For example, a second wave of the virus or failure of a gold ETF or the COMEX exchange as a whole for not being able to deliver physical gold demand, which there's a lot of these days. Four, U.S.-China relations. Some thought we're on the rebound when a Phase 1 trade deal was announced a few months ago. Look, those relations now look to be on the verge of devolving into a new Cold War.
Yeah, it does. But, you know, the reinstituted tit-for-tat tariffs, the new U.S. policies that geared to punish China for its clampdown on its freedoms in Hong Kong, Chinese retaliation, China's takeover of Taiwan, renewed military conflict in the South China Sea. Any one of these events, Dave, could send geopolitical volatility just sky high. What do you think that would do to the markets? It would tank the markets. And, of course, it would send... There's only one place gold can go, and that's upward.
You've taught me well, Melody. fifth, the U.S. economy as a whole is in its most fragile state since the Great Depression. Even if last week's dubious government job numbers are anywhere close to reality, and I don't believe that for a second, there's still an awful lot of unemployed Americans out there. Tie that to the inability and the questionable likelihood of Congress to come up with another rescue package before they adjourn for this fall's elections, plus a presumed 40 to 50% drop in GDP this quarter, and you have a midsummer nightmare about to come true. The gold market likely hasn't priced in any of these effects right now. And it won't take all five to drive gold higher either. Any one of them could do the trick. Be prepared, ladies and gentlemen. Melody will tell you how.
They just have to give us a call at 1-800-375-4188. And, you know, if you're looking at a 40, 50% drop in GDP in the second quarter, Dave, it's... You just can't turn around and have a 40 to 50% increase the next quarter. It just doesn't happen. It can't happen. Unless they lie to us and say that it did. Oh, okay, so you tell us that it did. Okay, all right, we'll believe you. Anyway, so it's only going to get more interesting. And some of the things I think we're going to talk about, and, you know, we probably don't, because I'll probably... get a little fired up.
yeah, come on, let's go there.
You know, it's, I mean, the world again is insane. But let's just talk about, before we head into a break, the World Bank said today, and again, I'm not a fan of the World Bank, you know, but let's face the, you know, let's take what they say. You know, this, what's happening and what the world faces economically, the shock, the global shock, has approached with astonishing speed, and that's going to result in the largest shock the global economy has witnessed in more than 70 years. Millions of people are expected to be pushed into extreme poverty. No one else is talking about this. In an updated global economic prospects, the World Bank projected that global economic activity is going to shrink by almost 5.5% this year. This is the deepest recession since the 13.8 global contraction in 1945 and 46 at the end of the war. The 5.2 downturn this year will be the fourth worst global downturn over the past 150 years. Now, Dave, 5.2% downturn really doesn't sound that bad. But it is going to be the fourth worst global downturn in 150 years? We'll be right back, ladies and gentlemen. Think about that while we're on break.
Food prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
We all know that Berkey Water Purification Systems are the most trusted name in water filtration. As an authorized Berkey dealer for over 6 years and serving thousands of satisfied customers, the Berkey Guy offers amazing specials for Berkey water filtration systems. The Berkey Light Systems include a set of self-sterilizing and recleanable black purification elements that purify water by removing chlorine, pathogenic bacteria, cysts, and parasites to non-detectable levels and remove harmful chemicals such as herbicides and pesticides. Order the Berkey Light System today today, complete with two black Berkey elements for only $231, and the Berkey Guy will ship your order free of charge. With the purchase of a Berkey light, the Berkey Guy is also offering a set of fluoride and arsenic filters for only $39.99. That's over 30% off the retail price. Call the Berkey Guy at 1-877-886-3653. That's 1-877-886-3653. Or order online at GoBerkey.com. That's GoBerkey.com today.
And welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. I think everyone knows Kroger. You've heard of Kroger, haven't you, Dave?
I'm afraid so. They're the parent company of the Minute Market that we go to a lot.
Well, I guess this is good news.
Beauty's in the eye of the beholder, isn't it?
Well, Kroger is bringing its leading-edge automated warehouse facilities to three different regions of the United States. The supermarket giant and Ocado, one of the world's largest dedicated online grocery retailers, they're going to be building three new customer fulfillment centers in the Great Lakes, Pacific Northwest, and the West regions. Well, Dave, that sounds like a lot of jobs. The CFC model, incorporating state-of-the-art automation and artificial intelligence, will be used to expand Kroger products to larger footprint via omnichannel sales. Oh, so maybe it doesn't mean the creation of new jobs. It's automation, right?
Yeah, but these are new facilities.
Mm-hmm. So, well, that will provide jobs in building. So, I mean, that's the good news. The new facility in the West is going to measure about 300,000 square feet. The new facility in the Pacific Northwest, about 200,000 square feet. And the facility in the Great Lakes region will measure 150,000. So, when operational, Kroger says that the facilities will collectively create more than 1,000 new jobs. So that's 1,000 new jobs for three facilities, right?
Yeah, that's how I'm reading it too.
Yes. So those are big warehouses for 300 people. When operational, Kroger says the facilities will collectively, So kind of interesting, Dave. And Kroger is incredibly excited to construct these three additional industry-leading customer fulfillment centers.
Early 2021, it says, the first will be open. So good luck to those 1,000 employees. We wish you a long and fruitful and rewarding career. That is until the next generation of robots takes those employment levels down.
It really is sad. And you know what, Dave? I had the discussion today with somebody, about these large multinational corporations, getting all these subsidies from governments. So they're supposed to give back, but they don't. But they keep taking. How much did it cost the taxpayers of those areas so that Kroger chose that location?
Well, that's a very important point.
And you've got 300 plus people per location. So what is the cost to that taxpayer in that area? Thousands, probably thousands and thousands of dollars. And they never release that information. Only the big profile ones will you see that type of information. So, it's people don't get it. And, I think automation. And Dave, have you heard anything about with with the reopening of businesses, do you think a lot of them will convert to automation in this time frame? Or do you think that they just they won't have the money, the extra money for that extra expense?
Well, I think it'll be a combination of factors. I mean, on the one hand, certainly the circumstances of this shutdown and the widespread uncertainty surrounding the reopening of America could lead to, I think, to a number of companies speeding up robotics and other automation plans. Yeah. Now, let's hope that doesn't happen. I mean, the nature of it, because robotics, AI, and enhanced automation in general are expensive, particularly if a business is involved in a significant supply chain that could easily be disrupted if there were errors as their new systems are rolled out. I think that's going to slow down. Let's put it this way. I don't think it's going to speed up automation, despite, I think, the setting that the current shutdown creates for that scenario to unfold. Again, I think particularly, you know, even large size, I mean, companies have taken a big hit, particularly non-public companies, but even some mid-cap, small cap are taking big hits, and large cap companies as well. So I think it's going to take time for them to recover. And so the silver lining in terms of robotics and phased obsolescence, it's hopefully still some years away.
Well, the one thing about the robotics and technology, you don't have to worry about them getting COVID-19.
Well, that's therein lies mm-hmm. a problem for us humans.
Now, this is the one, and I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I'm thinking to myself, I just don't get where or what people are thinking. Nine members, nine of them, of the Minneapolis City Council announced yesterday that they will begin the process of ending the city's police department. Decades of police reform efforts have proved that the Minneapolis Police Department cannot be reformed and will never be accountable for its actions. We're here today to begin the process of ending the Minneapolis Police Department, creating a new transformative model for cultivating safety in our city. Gee, what might that be? Dave.
Mallory.
You know what I told somebody today? Hey, let them end the police department. And then let the people of Minneapolis deal with what happens. I mean, are people insane? How can you begin the process? I've heard it's not going to be done. I don't know how much, you know. Didn't the mayor say there's no way it would be done or something like that?
Yeah, but I mean, yeah, the mayor was booed and shouted down at a rally on Saturday.
I mean, are you kidding me?
When he made those comments.
What is wrong with these people? I mean, what happens when they want to call 911 and nobody responds? And then they're going to have to deal with the situation on their own.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see what kind of proposals come out of this new debate. I mean, one option is something, if you use a Pennsylvania model, which actually Pennsylvania is beginning to move away from, there are a number of particularly rural towns who have no police force that they contract with the Pennsylvania State Police to provide law enforcement services. Some band together, the real small adjacent contiguous communities, 4, 5, 6 of them, will form a regional police force that serves all of them.
Yeah, that'll work well.
I don't know of any that have no police protection whatsoever. It's a new concept in providing safety protection to people and property.
A new concept. It's downright nutty, you know. just downright nutty. And it's like, what is happening?
Yeah.
I mean, what is happening? And it's,
you think about unintended consequences. This could be a prime example. There are other ways of forcing change upon either a department, an agency, or in fact a community.
But that's just not the police force that needs change.
Correct.
You know? I mean, it's just, I don't know. I'm not going to get fired up today, so let's move on to another report today. Here you have Bolton. He's planning to publish his memoir on June 23rd. I guess the White House has to sign off on it, but they haven't as of yet. Bolton is lining up interviews on TV networks to promote his book, The Room Where It Happened, a White House memoir. I mean, I'm no fan of Bolton, trust me, ladies and gentlemen. And, you know, they've all have stretched the truth one way or another in their careers. And it is, Dave, it's hard to figure out, you know, how true are these books? You know, they're sensationalized. The ultimate goal, ladies and gentlemen, is to make as much money as possible on these books. I mean, that's kind of the goal for everything. So, you know, you'll have to see, see if it's worth reading and so forth. But
my biggest disappointment, Melody, that the publication is scheduled for a Tuesday. So you and Butch will have the pleasure of talking about some of the big excerpts that are making news that day. Of course, you know, I'm guessing a book of this by this author, and you know, especially given the circumstances of how he left the government as national security advisor, that probably going to be several days worth of comments we'll be making.
Probably. Oh my gosh. I mean, you know, he was the warmonger and he didn't get his little way with Iran, and, you know. But anyway, so it's just another thing for an election year and for things to get crazier and crazier. But with everything that's going on, maybe very little attention will be paid to this book, and I hope that's the case. What else do we have here, Dave? I'm not a fan of Facebook or Zuckerberg. I don't know. I disagree with that. And what else can we talk about? What else is there? We got about 2 minutes left.
Well, let me
Oh, you wanted something. Yes.
Yeah, this is something we mentioned on last Monday's program, the Fed's Main Street lending program, which Jerome Powell had said was ready to be rolled out any day now. Well, as it's still being readied for rollout, the Fed has changed the terms of the program to allow for greater participation. The Fed said today, in fact, that it's lowering the initial minimum loan and maximum loan limits that can be borrowed, plus is expanding the loan terms from 4 to 5 years. This Main Street lending program is part of the Fed's efforts to get money to small and medium-sized businesses hurt during the recession, even though we were under the understanding that that's what the CARES Act was all about. But as we now know, that program depended on who you know as much as you know, the quality of your application. So, in any event, we'll keep you abreast. The minimum loan will now be $250,000. The max could be as much as $300 million. That should be rolled out one day this week. We'll tell you how it's going. In the meantime, the program is over for today. On behalf of Melody Cederstrom, thank you so much for listening. Have a good evening. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch Ball. Good night, everybody.
Broadcasting to the U.S. and around the world by way of Clear Digital Audio, 22,500 miles above the planet, this is the Global Star Radio Network.